Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, guys, good morning. It's Sunday, the 5th of July, 2009. That makes this Solder Smoke 111. And let me start off by wishing you all in the USA a belated happy 4th of July. I hope the 4th of July weekend is going well for you. Also, hope that Field Day went well, a big event in the U.S. Always participated when I was a kid. My club was the Crystal Radio Club, and we went up to a Nike Hercules launch site on the outskirts of New York City, where they used to keep the anti-aircraft missiles from the Cold War. We were allowed to use it for Field Day. I had great fun. Always had great fun on Field Day. I haven't done it in recent years. I've grown lazy and prefer to stay in the shack at the workbench, but I hope Field Day was good for everybody. Some Italy travelogue. I have much to report because we have been on the road all this week. We were out at what I think is a really interesting and kind of oddly exotic location, the island of Ponza, P-O-N-Z-A. Part of the Pontine Island chain. It's a small group of islands, five really big ones, a whole bunch of little smaller ones there, but five principal islands, about 35 kilometers, I guess that's 20 miles in American money, out in the ocean, out in the Med, pretty much off the coast of Lazio, off the region that includes Rome. Kind of, if you look at the map, if you go kind of midway between Rome and Naples, and then go out to sea about 35 kilometers, you find the island of Ponza, an interesting place. It's about 5 miles long, I guess about a quarter mile wide. About 3,000 people live out there year-round, and the population swells to about 30,000 in August. Volcanic islands, amazingly beautiful, really, really beautiful. Only two of the islands are populated, Ponza, which I just mentioned, and then there's another island called Ventotene, which I'm told during the wintertime only has about 75 residents. Again, a much larger population during summertime. Now, how you get out there is sort of technically interesting. We had guests with us here in Rome this week, and we took them with us out to Ponza. So we didn't have enough room in the car to get everybody in there, so we decided to take the train. We took the train from Rome to Anzio, a place that will be recognized, I think, by most American and British listeners, because that's where the big landings on the Italian mainland took place during World War II, the Anzio beachhead. It takes you about an hour to get down to Anzio on the train, and then a quick trip over to the port, and you get on a hydrofoil, high-speed hydrofoils. They have these little wings under the hull. And once they get up to speed, the most of the hull rises up out of the water, and you're flying along on this little wing. I had ridden around on one of the U.S. Navy hydrofoils many years ago, and I hadn't been on a commercial one. And that's what takes you out to Ponza. It takes about an hour from Anzio. You hop on this thing, and the thing really starts zipping along. 1 hour later, you're on the island of Ponza, and it's really a neat, amazing, beautiful place. We had a nice little house up on the hill with the friends that were visiting us, and we linked up there with friends from northern Italy, friends from the Venice area, and So we had a really good time. We were out there for 4 days. One of the highlights was that we took a we got a boat and took a boat trip over about 5 miles from Ponza. 5 miles, I guess, let me get myself oriented here. 5 miles, I think, yeah, to the west, and went over to the island of Palmarola. And Palmarola is, I mean, even more beautiful than Ponza, I think. Nobody lives out there. I'm told there's only one guy who stays out there all year round. And he's a, as you'd expect, he's a professor of mathematics. he may have the knack. Anyway, he's out there year round. There are a few houses out there, and I think people go out there during the summer, but it's largely unpopulated. It's a big island. And I guess it's about maybe a quarter of the size of Ponza, but surrounded by these beautiful grottos. And the guy who was driving the boat was quite expert at it. And he would tell us all to just kind of duck down in the boat, and then he'd take the boat and drive right into the grotto, and all of a sudden you'd be in this cave with this kind of bluish translucent water below you, all very nice and cool. We had lunch out there on the boat among the grottos. If you go around the backside of Palmarola, all of a sudden they have a little restaurant there. Some entrepreneur has set up a little summertime restaurant, and you hop off the boat and you get to go over and have your afternoon coffee. Beachside, great place, amazing place, a lot of history there. The brave Ulysses is reported to have passed through there. And Ponza is mentioned by another name in the Odyssey. The Saracens, raised havoc there for many years. It was a summer place of the Roman emperors, and a number of emperors apparently had summer places out there, because it's great. It's this island that's just so close to Rome. You get the feeling that you're really far away, but then you realize you're just 1 hour by train. And well, of course, the emperors weren't riding trains or hydrofoils, but they were relatively close too, time wise. And so they were out there. One pope was out there. They apparently, one of the popes, Saint Santo Silverio, was sent out there in exile and apparently died there. And he's the patron saint of the islands. Just an amazingly beautiful place, and we're really fortunate to have. It's just another example of one of the great things, one of the most important things about Italy, is that you're surrounded by almost, it seems like, a never-ending supply of really, really beautiful places. So three cheers for Ponza and the Pontine Islands. Great trip. All right, now, radio. Yeah, time to talk radio. Let's see. Look at my list here. I guess I should talk. Yeah, we could start talking about regens. I've been saying bad things about regenerative receivers. I've been saying them publicly. I've been saying them on the blog. I said on the blog over the last couple of weeks that was fooling around with my crystal radio that I kind of resurrected from London days, and was listening to it. And the station that I could pick up here is Vatican Radio. And it's really kind of neat, because when I got the crystal radio going, I'm listening, and you kind of have to tweak the radio and keep kind of poking at it. Sometimes with a crystal radio, literally poking at the crystal until you kind of pull, almost conjure the audio out of the radio. And I was doing that, and all of a sudden I hear Gregorian chants, you know, the very religious Gregorian chants, you know, and very beautiful music in Latin. And I knew that I had tuned in to Vatican Radio. And I just left it there for a while. Every once in a while I'd come into the shack and put the earphones on and listen to a few minutes of Vatican Radio. I'm listening to Vatican Radio on the AM broadcast band. We're very close to Vatican City, but the antennas and the transmitters are a bit further out of town. I think it's at Santa Maria in Galleria. So this was sort of a heavenly experience, and I just, you know, the crystals, the nature, the lack of power, the lack of a power requirement for the receiver, it all just seemed very kind of ethereal and heavenly. So I kind of reached the conclusion that there's something heavenly about crystal radios. And then I turned to the regen. I started working on my, because this all put me in kind of a minimalist mood. And I started working on my ET1. This is the one FET transceiver recently described in SPRAD, based on an earlier effort by another radio amateur. And it's all, the idea is you have one little MPF 102 FET, and you have it on a four-pole double-throw switch, and when the switch goes one way, the FET is hooked up to a regenerative receiver circuit. You throw it the other way, it becomes a little oscillator running on, in my case, on the 3579 color burst frequency. And this, I found this all very, very interesting. It's on the blog. You could take a look at it. Just go over to the left-hand column and look up Minimalist Radio. You'll see a picture of my rig. And anyway, I started messing with it. And, you know, I've said this before. I go through this thing with regens every few years. I get mad at them. I say I'm never going to mess with another regen. And then a few years later, I come across an article and I forget about all the pain. You forget about the bad stuff. You only remember the good stuff. That's a kind of a natural property of human memory. I think it's particularly a property of human memory about ham radio. So I forget about all the bad stuff with the regens, and I find myself building another regen. Okay, so now I've got this regen here. And the receiver, well, it, you know, I never expected it to work as well as the Drake 2B. Come on. But I had a lot of problems with this thing, and it's just agony, because you change one thing, and then if you change the amount of regeneration going on, it affects the frequency. If you change the frequency, it affects the amount of regeneration. You're constantly tweaking and poking at these things. They're always screeching at you. And anyway, to make a long story short, I decided that if crystal radios are from heaven, well, regens are from the other place. This spoke, you know, there are fans of regens out there. And I know guys love regen receivers. And, you know, to each his own. I have my opinion about them. But somebody posted on the blog that I was being unfair to regens. I'm sorry. I, you know, like I said, everybody's got their own opinion. But in the course of doing this, I came across something that I thought was really cool. Roger in his SPRAD article recommended the use of high Z crystal headphone. I'd been using some rather low Z low impedance headphones cans, but I said, okay, let me give the crystal earphone thing a shot, and we'll see if that helps. So I went to the web and looked and found where I could find them. And lo and behold, an organization that I'd been in touch with a number of years ago popped up on the screen. We're talking about the Crystal Set Society, XTALSET, X-T-A-L, the Crystal Set Society, a wonderful organization. They had available at a very reasonable price a very nice and sensitive crystal earphone, which I ordered. And very quickly, it showed up in my mailbox here in Rome, along with, and this is why these guys got the Good Guy of the Month award from the Solder Smoke organization. Our committee decided that they should win this prestigious award, along with the crystal headphone that I ordered. They sent along their really excellent Crystal Set Society newsletter, November 2008 edition, and their spring 2009 catalog, including books, kits, and parts, where radioists build again, www.midnightscience.com, and a piece of candy. I thought that was a really nice touch. thanks to the Crystal Set Society. But I want to kind of talk to you about some of the things that I found in this newsletter, because this newsletter is a real, I think, a real treasure trove of technical information. It reminds me of Tim Walford's Hot Iron newsletter out of the UK. And I think for similar reasons, it's kind of a shame that these things aren't more widely circulated on the internet, because they'd reach more people. But anyway, in the November 2008 edition, there's all kinds of really interesting technical articles. There's vacuum fluorescent display amplifiers for primitive radio by Pete Fredericks, AC7ZL. Really interesting article. Let me see what else we have here. The Hula Loop, an article by Dan Peterson, W7OIL, about loop antennas. And then what really caught my attention was on the back page, and I think it's in the letters to the editor section. Anyway, there's a discussion here about the Barney Google Crystal Radio Lightning Arrester. Note, Barney Google was a 1920s cartoon. He had a horse named Sparkplug. And it says here, to use a Sparkplug, an old, you know, a car Sparkplug, as a lightning arrester. And I thought this was really interesting. He said, use an iron bar, 1/2 inch thick and about 1 inch wide, and long enough to drive into the earth for ground. Drill a hole about 3 inches from the top of the rod and have an automobile garage thread a hole to fit a spark plug. Today, 1.5 inch angle iron works. Connect the aerial lead-in to the tip of the spark plug with an alligator clip before going into the house. Lightning will arc through the spark plug and to ground. Set the minimum gap thickness of about a U.S. dime. It says here, a long wire will cause static a static arc from the plug. Adjust the gap accordingly. I've had long wires arc in this system. It will produce a radio signal in the close area. It shows you how much static is on the antenna. The spark plug found on a farm had a little funnel on it, which Frank says was used to squirt a little gas into the spark plug for starting on cold winter mornings. Those spark plugs had a screw on top so you could attach a wire. Nowadays, we just use alligator clips. Excellent. Man, I think that was really cool. I never thought about that, but sure, I guess it would help when all that energy starts coming in along the antenna wire, have it just jump across the spark gap and go right to ground. So anyway, thanks again to the Crystal Set Society for sending along the earphone, and for the Crystal Set Society newsletter, and the catalog and the piece of candy, www.midnightscience, that's all one word, .com. Check it out. The catalog. Oh, man, the catalog is really cool. All kinds of great kits in there. Books on crystal radio. Ultrasound. Oh, this is something I really got to show this to Billy. Ultrasound. Using kits here that will allow you to listen to the very high audio frequency sounds emitted by animals like bats. We've got a lot of bats here, so we've got to get on the frequency for the bats. They sell 365 picofarad variable capacitors, experimenters packs with various coils, resistors. Oh man, get this catalog. It's really good. All right, let me tell you about another purchase I made. A while back, I mentioned on Solder Smoke that I was the victim of a pickpocket here in Rome. You really can't complain about crime here in Rome. It's a very, very safe place. About the worst thing that'll happen to you is you could get pickpocketed. And I almost felt like it was my own fault. Of course, it wasn't. It was the fault of the guy who did it. But I kind of left myself exposed to it. I was on a crowded bus, and I took my little MP3 player that I was using to listen to the morning news while on the way to work on the bus, and I just stuck it in my kind of baggy coat pocket. And as I kind of made my way through the bus to get out to go to work, somebody obviously stuck their hand in the pocket and got the MP3 player. So I missed it because I used the news programs in the morning to keep in touch with what's going on here and to practice my Italian. So I was looking for a replacement, and I decided to get a little replacement radio, but hopefully something with a shortwave band in it. So I found it. It's called the Grundig Mini 300 by Grundig. Grundig Mini 300 receiver. I got mine via Amazon.com. If you're interested in getting one, be sure to go to Amazon through the link on the Blogspot page. But this is a really nice little receiver. It's very light. It's got a neat little antenna for shortwave and AM there. Good sound, good sensitivity. It doesn't have a BFO, so you can't really listen to CW or sideband on it. Although I suppose the really intrepid radio amateurs out there could put together a little external BFO. But I'm real happy with it because I can carry it around and just stick it in my pocket. And if I want to, I could just flip it over to the shortwave bands. It seems quite sensitive. Pulls in a lot of nice shortwave signals. Good thing to have. So I recommend it. They're pretty inexpensive. I think it was like $30. And so that is one of my new radio purchases this week. Let's see, what else is going on here? Ah, some astronomy. We've been doing some astronomy here. I'm very pleased to report. And I have something up on the blog. Jupiter is up in the early morning hours. And the other night, I forget why I couldn't sleep, but something was bothering me. I couldn't sleep. I got up early. And, you know, that's the good thing about being a radio fanatic. Insomnia, a bout of insomnia, it has its benefits because, well, it gives you the opportunity to do things like take the telescope out into the courtyard and take a look at Jupiter. And that's what I did. Jupiter's up in the morning, and this must have been about 4:30 a.m. The sun was just starting to come up here. Well, it was dark enough so I could still see Jupiter. So I aimed my 6-inch Dobsonian Newtonian telescope from Orion. I aimed it at Jupiter and was rewarded with a really nice view of the disk of Jupiter. The clouds, you can see the clouds going across laterally on the planet, and I could see the four Galilean moons. This is the 400th anniversary year of Galileo's discovery of the moons of Jupiter. A big discovery because it sort of confirmed that we weren't at the center of things. When Galileo saw that there were celestial bodies in orbit around Jupiter, it kind of called into question the whole idea that we were at the center of everything and reinforced Copernicus's ideas and all that. So this was an important discovery. And it's always, even though I've seen it, you know, many, many, many times, it's always really neat to see these four little moons. If you wait, and if you have a schedule, you can know which one is disappearing behind Jupiter or going out in front of it and casting a shadow at any particular moment. You could kind of watch them slowly dance around Jupiter. So that was a view from the courtyard. I wanted to put something up on the blog about this, and I searched the web for a picture that would be similar to what I see through my eyepiece here in Rome, and I found one, and I put it up on the blog, and I put a little article there about what I had seen, and it was only at the last minute that I said, well, let me check the source, let me make sure that they're okay with me putting the picture up there, and let me see what the source of this picture was, and that's when I found out something really interesting. The picture that I have up on the blog of Jupiter with the Galilean moons, as I said, very similar to what I see through my eyepiece, but this particular picture, the picture that's up on the blog, was not taken from Earth. This picture was taken from Mars. It's a view of Jupiter from orbit around Mars. I think it's Mars Global Surveyor, NASA spacecraft there, took this picture of Jupiter from Mars orbit, which I thought was really, really cool. Anyway, it's up there. Check it out. Check out the article. It's on Blogspot. We've also done some astronomy. The guests that we had here had kids with them, and I wanted to do some astronomy, but didn't want to drag everybody out in the middle of the night. So we were having a late dinner, and I looked out the window from the living room, and I could see Saturn just above the trees there. And I said, let me show them the rings of Saturn. So from the living room, I guess this is kind of cheating. I just opened up the window, positioned the telescope, and as everybody was finishing up dinner, they stepped over to the telescope, looked out there, and could see the rings of Saturn. They could even see Titan, Saturn's moon Titan, off there to the left. It's not a particularly good moment to look at Saturn because the rings are kind of edge-on. You can see them, but they're not nearly as impressive as if you're looking with them more at an angle. So you look at them kind of edge-on, and you see these two lines going off to either side, and you know they're the rings of Saturn, but it's not quite as impressive as it was when we were looking at it from the sidewalks of London, from the mean streets of South Kensington and Chelsea. I also think, I haven't checked, but Saturn seems to be a lot smaller in the eyepiece than it was when I last looked. So I suspect that we're orbitally a bit further away. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But it just seemed like it was bigger in the eyepiece before. Okay, speaking of natural wonders, we've had some more. This is kind of natural wonders of the... We're shifting now to natural wonders of the unpleasant kind. We've had some additional tremors here. And I guess it was a week or so ago, just before we headed off to Ponza, I had already dozed off, but my wife was still reading, and all of a sudden we got that old familiar feeling of quakes from the Abruzzo region. It wasn't nearly as serious as the one that caused all the destruction up there, of course, but it was kind of scary. And I think a couple days ago, at 1:30 in the afternoon, while we were still out on Ponza, they had kind of a 4.1 tremor up there. So you could imagine the anxiety that this causes in the community that lost 300 people and most of the city center up there in Aquila. So a lot of sympathy for the folks up there, and I hope that those tremors are the end of it. Let's see what else. Oh, QRSS, back to the visual mode. I've kind of shifted away from whisper and gone back to visual. One of the reasons I do this is laziness, because if I have the whisper system set up, I can't use the other audio features of the computer. I can't play any music on the computer. I can't play any audio files or anything like that, because I've got the audio output from the sound card going up to the QRSS transmitter. Also, and you can imagine how difficult this must be, every day or so I have to tweak the clock on my computer. So anyway, laziness kicked in, and I decided, okay, let me go back to the visual mode. So I'm back in visual mode, and transmitting my upside-down FSK signal. When I first went back, I was really disturbed to find that I couldn't see my signal on Johan ON5EX's grabber up there in Belgium. All winter, I had been solid all day into Johan's grabber. And when I shifted back and went up to visual mode, I checked Johan's grabber, and I said, "Man, I'm not there. There must be something wrong." And I checked the frequency. The frequency was okay. Looked like I was getting the same amount of power out as I've always been getting. But nothing. I wasn't getting up there. Nothing. I wasn't doing anything. Also, the other bands sounded strangely dead. And I'm thinking, all right, and you know, look, this is a classic ham radio story, especially near solar minimum. You think, okay, something's wrong with the equipment, something's wrong with the antenna. I couldn't hear anything on 80 meters. I was fooling around with my regen receiver there, hoping to pick up some signals on the low end of the 80-meter CW band. Nothing. Niente. Wow. So I think, okay, there's got to be something wrong with the antenna. My antenna's quite fragile. It's up on the roof. Something could have happened to it. And so I actually went through and started doing a little bit of troubleshooting on the antenna. I looked at it, and I think, well, maybe it's something's wrong with the insulation. It's all going to ground or something like that. It was just conditions. The antenna was fine. I went up to the roof for nothing. It was just really, really bad conditions. The last couple of weeks, there have been mornings when I've been listening to 80 meters and not hearing a single signal on the 80 meter CW band. It's really been dismal. I mean, the old soul has been completely kaput. Things seem to have improved a bit now, and I think I am getting into Johann's grabber. It was interesting too because I found on closer inspection that at those times where I was not making it into Johann's grabber in Belgium, I was skipping into, I guess on real short skip, into some of the grabbers up there, Claudio's grabber up in northern Italy. So it was really odd conditions. Normally during the winter, I'd be skipping right over northern Italy and on one hop making it into ON5 EX's grabber in Belgium. But when conditions were bad, short skip was taking me into northern Italy, but not at all into Belgium. Kind of interesting. Anyway, I'm back on visual. If you go to the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page, you can see on the right I have ON5 EX's grabber displayed. And usually when the sun is up over Europe, you can see my beautiful upside-down FSK CW signal scrolling along. Now sort of close to the bottom of the screen, about 10140020 hertz. In the QRSS world, we don't deal with kilohertz or megahertz. We deal with hertz. All right. Okay, let's see what else we got on the list here. Some really interesting emails going back and forth. This is not really in the mailbag segment, I was just sort of an observer on the email chain here, but some really interesting interchange of email between West W7ZOI, a number of others, and our friend Farhan in India about the design of bidirectional amps. You know, the BitX 20, designed by Farhan, has really had a really wonderful impact on ham radio home brewing around the world. Many people are building the BitX 20, and it's based on bidirectional amps, an amp that could be used in one way it's the signals are going one way and receive and another way on transmit. And it's kind of a tricky design. And Wes and a number of others have taken a look at it and tweaked it. And that's been an interesting project. And Wes has updated information on it on his website. Just Google W7ZOI. I'll try to make sure I have it up on a link to it on the Blogspot page. Very, very interesting stuff. Farhan has a really interesting design on his webpage, and I'll also try to get this up on the blog, but it's called the JBot amplifier. This is something that I've been looking for a long time, and I think is really interesting. It's a real simple amplifier to take a signal from about 1 milliwatt up to about 5 watts. And it's a simple design using BJT, simple, ordinary, easily available. Anyway, it's a real easy design, and it uses ordinary BJT transistors instead of the IRF 510s. I think a lot of us, as Farhan has noted in his article, have had trouble with the IRF 510, so he's kind of shifted back to BJTs and come up with this really wonderful design to go from 1 milliwatt to 5 watts with relative ease. I want to build one. I want to build one of these things. I've got a number of rigs around here that have kind of failed final amplifiers, as you guys have heard, and I think this rig is called JBot, or just a bunch of transistors, and it uses four transistors, two pairs of two transistors in push pull, with a couple of transistors as a pre driver and a driver, to go from 1 milliwatt to five to 5 watts. Very, very nice. And I'll try to get the link to that up on the Blogspot page. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, something else that, let's see, what are we going on here? Oh, go back to regens for a minute. Michael, AA1TJ, I think, is taking a plunge into the really, really hellish area of regens. He's got a design on his page called the Extaflex. And man, I read about this thing. I read it kind of quickly, and it was it sounds like a rig from the other place. This thing, the Extaflex. And take a look at it. In the email he sent around, it promises, as he said, and this was not quite clear to me, buns of steel. I guess it's because it sounds like some sort of exercise device. But this one really sounds like a regen from hell. I hope it doesn't work out that way. Another Mike, WA6ARA, when I chimed in from California, when I said that regens from hell, he was much more diplomatic about it. He said that the regens are not actually from hell, but they can be beset by demons. All right. Okay. All right. Let's see. As long as we're on a religious theme here, and I don't mean to be sacrilegious here. I don't want to offend anybody. You know, we really try hard on Solder Smoke not to do that. But Billy and I needed to buy some WD-40. You know, WD-40 is, I think, one of several items that hold our technological civilization together. The other one is duct tape. I think without duct tape and WD-40, the whole thing would just collapse. I'm sure many of you will agree. But we needed some WD-40. You know, you just need some. And what happened was my old can of WD-40 that I bought, I think, in the Azores or Central America someplace, it was still filled, but somehow the spray mechanism was getting all gummed up, and we needed WD-40. So we figured, well, we'll just go down to the local hardware store. And as we walked down there, he and I kind of discussed what the Italians would call WD-40, because W really doesn't exist as a letter in the Italian language. So V does. It's VU. And if you want to say TV here, you say TV. And so we thought, and sometimes W comes out as W. If they want to say WWW, like in the World Wide Web, they just say woo woo woo, which is really VVV, woo woo woo. So we figured, okay, let's try W40 or WW40. And anyway, we had this discussion on the way down there. We walked into the hardware store, and we hit the hardware store guy with what we suspected would be the proper translations of WD-40, and we got a completely blank stare. This guy didn't know what we was talking about, what we were talking about. He didn't know about WD-40. How could this be? How could, you know, this is a highly technological society. How could Italy get through the day without WD-40? They have duct tape. But he sold us this can of some other stuff that promised to lubricate as well as WD-40. But of course, I was suspicious. We're getting into a Vatican theme here this morning. But a friend of mine from Ireland, EI7BA John, who I used to talk to on 17 meter. Double sideband from the Azores. John, EI7BA, we were talking about it. And, you know, the Irish have the gift of gab. They've all kissed the Blarney Stone. It's the land of saints and scholars, the land of James Joyce and great poetry and just eloquence. And John exhibited real Irish eloquence when he described to me WD-40. I mentioned to him WD-40, and I told him how important WD-40 is, and he immediately shot back in a beautiful Irish brogue, and he said, "Oh yeah, WD-40, it's the Pope's pee." Meaning, It's good. It's really powerful. It has, I suppose, miraculous properties. The Pope's pee. All right. Enough of that. Anyway, we didn't get the WD-40, but we found this sort of substitute, and we sprayed it on the wheels of Billy's skateboard, which increased his speed by a factor of at least 5. And so he was greatly impressed by the power of lubrication here on the skateboard. It was really good. Anyway, when we got home, I fidgeted a bit with the old can of WD-40. I'm happy to report that we have WD-40 working here in the shack. All right, time for a new sound effect and a new feature here on Solder Smoke. No, that's not what I wanted. Hold on. Let's see. This might be better. Radio reading room. I probably should have included the Crystal Radio Society's stuff here, but a couple of new other new publications have come to my attention. Well, one old, one new. Spratt 139, Summer 2009 edition. Excellent stuff. It's got a great picture on the cover of Hans Sommer's G-Zero UPL receiving his QRP Hall of Fame plaque from Dick Pasco, G-Zero BPS. Richly deserved. Congratulations, Hans. Well deserved. Really great to see you getting that award there on the cover of Spratt. Great stuff. The whole issue, 139, I think is exceptionally good. All kinds of great articles in there. But the one that really got to me, and I really like this one, was, let me flip my way through here, a simple vacuum 80-meter superhead by Gert, PA3CRC. And it's just it's just filled with great articles, great references, great humor. And it says here, for example, the AF output from the ECL-80 is more than enough to drive your whole family mad, the neighbors included. He's got all kinds of great articles here about just little comments on the parts and everything else, how he built the thing, and man, I just love this article. So get a hold of Spratt 139, check it out. It's a real simple little super hat using, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 tubes. He builds the cabinet out of PC board and. What else did I want to say? Well, anyway, I should have kind of marked the really fun parts here, but he makes all the comments here. Let me tell you the story. If you are a collecting ham, you are likely to have comparable parts in your junk box, in which case I hope to inspire you to use those valves. Be careful, though, with the high tension voltage, because 200 volts tickles a bit more than 12. Yes, it does indeed. He has all kinds of other kind of radio humor here. He says, antenna is a full-size 80-meter dipole, both ends 40 feet up with open feeders and symmetrical ATU. So no, I know what dynamic range, R-A-G-E, and he says, sorry, range is. A little dynamic range joke there. You got to be really among the conoscenti here to understand that. It says here, valves. He says here, a simple but good performing receiver can be built for almost free in just a few days. Providing valves are used, your junk box is piling out with the remains of old surplus sets, and you are willing to do some experimenting in order to use the stuff you've got on hand. This sounds like conditions that are met wherever hams live. Valves, because they are tolerant, easy to use, and give a lot of gain and dynamic range without the need for tricky techniques, getting rid of oscillations, and or applying oscillator power. None of that at all. They just work, and you end up with a magnificent glow-in-the-dark 80-meter DX receiver, giving great pleasure. Think of this. I think this receiver will also work well on 160 and 40. For higher bands, You might need more sensitivity, but who tries? It says here, let me tell you this story. I told you about that part here. Let's see. Anyway, he discusses the different parts, the different IF cans and how he builds them, where he gets the high voltage transformers, the trimmers, the vernier drive, chassis construction. Chassis has been made of double-sided copper-clad fiber, glass fiber epoxy board. Scrub them well and you can make a very sturdy chassis soldering them together. Make sure you drill the holes before soldering the parts together. With a good round and square 12-inch file, you can make the holes, make the larger holes very easily. It says here, for good grounding, you could put straps through the larger holes as a kind of feed-through. Don't know if that's really necessary, but it surely doesn't hurt. Let's see. Placement of the parts did not turn out to be critical, but use good sense. It talks about how to do transmitter muting. Just here, this receiver is a pleasure to use on CW. The tuning rate with the simple ball drive is okay. It has no AGC, so do not let strong-sounding signals surprise you. But the advantage of no AGC becomes apparent when listening to normal RagChew QSOs. It is far less tiring because the background noise stays in the background and the signals are on top of it. Very nice. Let's see. Talks about muting. Oh, this is kind of interesting. While muting the receiver for a long time, the mixer tube might cool down a little, causing a very small frequency shift. But I did not notice that. Very good. In a few weeks, I heard all of Europe on 80, some Asian signals, and one W station. I made nice contacts, too, using a MOPA TX and a 3575.6 crystal. The next step is putting it all together in a cabinet, together with a compartment for a speaker and power supply. I wish you much joy using using those old, beautiful parts and putting them back to work, and the results are really worthwhile. They surely do. It surely does seem worthwhile. He talks about all these old parts that have been moving through his hands for many years and time to put them to use. Anyway, great stuff. Thanks very much, Gert. And thanks to the GQRP guys for sending us another magnificent issue of Sprat. All right. Another section of the radio reading room. Book that I had and lost. Or actually, I think the copy I had actually sort of disintegrated. So through the miracle of Amazon.com, I ordered a replacement copy, and it's Arthur C. Clarke's book, Voices from the Sky. This one is interesting because it's a mix of science fiction and nonfiction, and he has a lot of good stuff in here about radio, radio theory, the history of radio. Clarke's, of course, a very insightful guy. A number of things here I just found amazing. He was talking about leap years and leap seconds. Didn't know this. I'll share it with you. It says, it's amazing how these errors can add up, like dust swept under the carpet, if you don't do something about them. By 1752, the calendar was no less than 11 days out of kilter, and it was therefore necessary to decree that September 2nd would be followed by September 14th. I suspect that most politicians would be very embarrassed, even now, if they had to face the cry that went up from the indignant populace. Give us back our 11 days. Man, bummer. Let's see. Maria Patricia joins us. We're joined by the lovely and talented Maria Patricia.
Hello.
There she is, a good girl. She's going to try to work some headphones, but she's going to wait a few minutes, I think. She wants to get the headphones on so she can listen to some music there on the Linux machine. Anyway, all kinds of great discussions from Clarke about timekeeping on different planets, what things might look like from Mercury. Let's see, I marked some pages here. What do we got here? Anyway, well, more from Arthur C. Clarke's Voices from the Sky in subsequent editions of Solder Smoke. All right, let me see what we got here. Okay, it's time for
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love them.
Indeed.
Yeah, Sodder Smoke Mailbag. Great. Leslie got the book, Sodder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics, that you guys have been all hearing about. He picked it up and received it in just a couple of days, even though he was ordering from Northern Ireland. Very good. He said he found the book fascinating and similar in tone to the book Yasmi, The Danny Weil and Colvin Radio Expeditions by James, K1TN. Thanks for the nice feedback on the book, Leslie. I'm really glad you liked it. Paul, NA5N, and Tony Fishpool and I have been kind of working on resurrecting an article that I told you guys about. It appeared in the Atlanticom 2002 proceedings. It's called A Handyman's Guide to QRP Transmitters. I thought it was a really great article. Very practical, very down-to-earth, very very much aimed at the kind of every ham. And I started going back and forth with Tony Fishpool at GQRP and Paul out there in Socorro, New Mexico, NA5N, the author of the article. And we're in the process. Paul has found some of the original floppy disks that the article was contained on, and amidst a very, very busy schedule, is attempting to reconstruct and resurrect the article. He delivered the original lecture at Atlanticon while very much under the weather with the flu or something, and so it's all a bit of a painful memory for him. But it's all coming back, and we're resurrecting the files and tweaking them a bit, and hopefully soon, in one form or another, we'll have the Handyman's Guide available for radio amateurs around the world. Paul is, as you guys all know, a really busy guy. He's been working on the amplifiers for the Very Large Array, the radio telescope out there in New Mexico. He's also a writer of really great articles about the history of the area around Socorro, New Mexico. I'll try to put some links up on the Blogspot page so you can check them out. There's one very interesting article in there about some of the flying saucer sightings that took place in that area during the 1950s. Anyway, it's a real pleasure to be able to work with Paul and with Tony on this Handyman's Guide project. And like I said, I hope we will get you the updated article very soon. Speaking of ham radio publications, there's Billy. Say hi, Billy.
Hi.
And Billy popped in. We're running a little bit later this morning. It's later in the morning than normal, so the kids are up and about. Anyway, speaking of publications, about the book, I got a really nice, very kind email from Bob, W9KNI. Bob is the author of some great books about DXing and ham radio, and he has his own publishing house called Idiom Books, and I'll get the link up on the Blogspot page. But idiom, just like the language, the idiom, the word from linguistics. But he, on his webpage, Bob gives a description of why he chose that name for his publishing company. And I thought it was really a very, very cool derivation, a very appropriate way to select a name for his particular kind of a publishing company. And its idiom, the original meaning was, I did it on my own books, because he formed this company to publish the DX book that he's written. And he's had great success with the book, sold tens of thousands of copies of it. But when he looked for the name, it was, I did it on my own, and he just dropped the last O, and it became Idiom Books. But thanks for sharing that with us, Bob. And like I said, I'll get the link up on the Blogspot page. And Bob is sending me along a copy of the DX book, and I really really look forward to reading it. Thanks, Bob. Got emails from two people who met up unexpectedly at a ham radio club meeting. Eldon, you guys remember Eldon? Eldon is the guy who built the mechanical water-powered QRSS transmitter We've discussed his work and had his stuff up on the blog. The other fella is Jeff, and Jeff is KO7M. You'll remember Jeff was has been the visitor here on Solder Smoke. He's the guy who lives out there in the Puget Sound area and has that beautiful Piper Cub aircraft. You'll remember Jeff with the Piper Cub that he listens to Solder Smoke while flying around in the Piper Cub. Anyway, without planning it, Jeff and Eldon met up at the Puget Sound Amateur Radio Club meeting and had a great conversation about airplanes and QRSS and ham radio. And, just great. Glad to hear you guys got together there at the club. Sounds like a great organization. Nick has sent us another report on the flea at MIT, complete with pictures and videos. I'll get that up on the Blogspot page. And he mentions that he's made some recordings of number stations. We talked about this in the last episode. On the subject of number stations, I want to mention something. Here's a question for you guys. When I was out at on Ponza Island, I did some shortwave listening, and I noticed that on the frequency of around 7143 kilohertz or 7.143 megahertz, there is a very strong station here in Europe transmitting. I don't know if they're in Europe, but the signal is strong in Europe, transmitting five-letter groups in CW. It's they're not making any sense. It's just five-letter groups. This made me think of kind of number station stuff. I wonder if anybody knows what's going on with that. Who is that transmitting what's obviously encoded five-letter groups on 7143 kilohertz? If anybody has any ideas or any theories about that, please let me know. Let's see. What else we got here? Oh, we're back at the... still in the mailbag, of course. Let me see here. We got a really nice email. Inspirational stuff from Alan, K6ZY. And one second here. As I shift over, let me shift over to the Linux computer. Let me see. I've got to get the... it says, Bill, ever since I've become licensed, I have felt vaguely uncomfortable about being an appliance operator. Reading all those old articles, I got the feeling that real hams built stuff. Indeed they do, Alan. And you know that queasy feeling? It's entirely understandable. Let's see here. Solder Smoke saved my life. Glad to hear it. You had shows where you admitted that even you felt that your projects were ugly, and you praised construction by real home brewers that looked like something that I would make. And you always talked about how things often don't work. I really believed that I was a klutz who couldn't make things work. I never really believed that it happens to even good home brewers. So I have decided that I will melt solder, learn all I can, and have fun. I am a real beginner, but I think I'm okay with that now. Alan, this is why we do the show. I want to share with you one of the great moments of my life. Last Sunday, I let the smoke out of my first part. I was so pleased. My wife looked at me like I was nuts. I was trying to learn something about a 555 timer. I told you I was a real beginner when I forgot to put a current limiting resistor before the LED. Sure enough, they really don't like it, and the smoke really does come out. Very cool. Alan, you're hooked. You're doomed. Thanks for that. Alan says, P.S., I bought your book and I'm enjoying it immensely. Great. Good, Alan. Thanks for sending that to us. Let's see, what else we have here? Oh, David, VK5, DJR, was inspired by Solder Smoke to build a QRSS rig. And I put a description of it up on the blog. Speaking of FETs, following up on Alan's description, David has on his blog a really great description of a really great description of what low power means. You know, we always have a tendency to say, well, QRP means less power than a light bulb or something like that. But David puts it in LED perspective. He takes his 20 milliwatt signal and compares it to the amount of power being used in any of the little LED, you know, lights that you have on all the gear and all the electronic devices around you, and concludes that his 20 milliwatt QRSS signal is comparable in power to the amount of juice being used by one of those little LED lamps that are on around him in the shack. I thought that was really cool. I have the actual quote up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. All right, and finally on the mailbag this week, we have another great email from Jonathan, KB1KIX. Jonathan has discovered another Gene Shepherd show. This one, quote, about the allure and attraction of rosin and such. Steve, snort rosin. Smith, out there on the left coast, this one's for you. Jonathan's going to send that to me, and I'll try to get the references up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. All right, guys, that's about it for this week. Time to get the day going. The kids are coming in here asking me to do things for them. You know how it is. So off I go. Hey, I hope you all check out the book. I hope some of you are taking the book off to vacation with you. It seems to be getting a lot of attention and well received. I think you'll like it. People seem to like it. No complaints so far. I hope you'll pick it up. It's available on lulu.com. The link is on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. It ships all around the world. People are reading it in Paris, in Australia, Northern Ireland, all over the place. And it seems to arrive very quickly. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's fun for you. It's designed to be both entertaining and educational, almost nutritious and delicious. All right, enough of that. 7-3 from Rome.